Welcome to the Corruption, Crime, and Compliance Podcast. Today, we're bringing back one of our most impactful episodes from last year featuring Alex Cotoia and Daniela Melendez. Listen in as we discuss the EU whistleblowing directive from October 2019. We'll return next week with our regular updates.
What the whistleblower directive does is really turn the burden of proof on its head so that it shifts in the context of retaliation to the person who took the detrimental action in the first place, who's then required to demonstrate that that action was not linked in any way to reporting. So it provides whistleblowers with significant protections against retaliatory action like suspension or layoff or dismissal, demotion, change of work location or hours, negative performance assessments, coercion, intimidation, et cetera, anything that you can think of that would be in the realm of retaliatory action against the whistleblower is essentially forbidden. And if you're going to take any of those actions, you have to be able to demonstrate a basis for doing so that doesn't relate to the whistleblower reporting a concern.
Global companies face unprecedented risks and challenges in today's economy. To mitigate these legal and economic risks, companies are rapidly embracing and elevating the importance of robust ethics and compliance programs to promote positive corporate citizenship. On Corruption, Crime, and Compliance, you'll hear from industry leaders and insiders about how to create effective ethics and compliance programs that will mitigate risks and maximize financial performance. Here's your host, Michael Volkov.
Well, hello, everyone. Mike Volkoff here. I'm really excited to have two stars from the law firm, my law firm here, Daniela Melendez and Alex Cotoia. We're going to all talk about the EU directive on whistleblowing, which Alex and Daniela have done a lot of work on and helping companies. So we're really glad to have them. Welcome, Alex. Welcome, Daniela.
Thanks, Mike. Glad to be here.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, I thought we'd start, you know, Alex, with talking about the EU directive and just if you can set the stage a little bit on whistleblowing. You know, it's obviously become a bigger issue here in the United States and it's a big issue in the EU. And can you explain the directive, how it works, and how people have to worry about compliance with it?
Yeah, sure, Mike. So the whistleblower directive, as we know it, came into force on December 16th, 2019. And what it really does, it sets EU-wide minimum standards for protecting whistleblowers and requires EU member states to establish whistleblower protection frameworks. Now, the whistleblowing directive specifically addresses procedures for establishing internal and external reporting channels for receiving and investigating complaints that relate to potential violations of a broad range of EU laws. It also defines the scope of activities that whistleblowers may report. It provides significant protections for whistleblowers, and it provides kind of examples of retaliation that would trigger whistleblower protection. Now, EU member states, as I said, were required to kind of adopt this framework and transpose it in EU language into their national laws by December 17th, 2021. I believe that initial deadline applied to organizations with at least 250 workers who were initially required to comply. However, private sector organizations with 500 to 249 workers had until December 17th, 2023 to comply with that directive.
So I think the important point is member states have to implement it. When we get to Daniela, we're going to talk about what the member states have done. One key issue that I know you guys have flagged for a lot of people is how do you operate or how does the EU whistleblower directive interact with the GDPR with regard to personal information? And does that regulation apply to this, to your whistleblower operation? And how do you see that issue, Alex?
So yeah, organizations processing personal data in the context of any investigation that's initiated under the new directive really do have to be cognizant of GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation. Subject to GDPR, so they have to check applicable EU member state laws for their particular requirements. And generally speaking, there's going to be a legal basis for processing personal data. So GDPR requires organizations to establish that legal basis in advance of conducting any investigation and exchanging or, you know, kind of assembling information related to that investigation.
Got you. The other thing that I noticed about the EU directive, and I was hoping you can address this, is they have pretty robust anti-retaliation prohibitions. And if you can sort of address that generally, what kind of prohibitions do we see and the implications of that? What do you think?
So it's very interesting that because Recital 93, I think, in the whistleblower directive refers to a burden of proof. And I think we talked about this earlier. What the whistleblower directive does is really turn the burden of proof on its head so that it shifts in the context of retaliation to the person who took the detrimental action in the first place, who's then required to demonstrate that that action was not linked in any way to reporting. So it provides whistleblowers with significant protections against retaliatory action like suspension or layoff or dismissal, demotion, change of work location or hours, negative performance assessments, coercion, intimidation, et cetera. Anything that you can think of that would be in the realm of retaliatory action against the whistleblower is essentially forbidden. And if you're going to take any of those actions, you have to be able to demonstrate a basis for doing so that doesn't relate to the whistleblower reporting a concern.
Turning on its head is putting it charitably, because in the United States, the burden would be on, let's say, the reporter, or let's say the company thought that somebody engaged in retaliation, and they would have to show that it was done with sort of the intent to retaliate or to punish or to discipline or to create some negative impact on the reporter. Here, Alex, the significance of what you're talking about is really, it's really major in the sense that the company has to prove a negative. In other words, I transferred the reporter to a new position, and then I have to prove that retaliation was not part of my motive in doing that. And when you say standing on its head, I would say dancing on the head of a needle or on the head of a pin, because to me, that seems like a difficult burden, and it means documentation of whatever decision you make with regard to a whistleblower and an employment action really has to be airtight and probably reviewed by legal counsel.
That's absolutely right, Mike. And I think operationally, it's going to prove very complex for organizations to kind of justify any kind of action that you're taking against a whistleblower. For that reason, I think, you know, anything can really, any kind of perceived adverse action against a whistleblower could be perceived as retaliatory.
Right. That's the whole thing. Now, when you look at, and we could just talk generally about this, Alex, but as SpeakUp reports come in through, let's say, your European operation, maybe your headquarters, but it also could be a subsidiary location. Is there then recommended steps that you would take in terms of how to handle it, how to engage the reporter, and, you know, when and where do you conduct an investigation of such types of allegations?
So as we said earlier, you know, the directive really sets a minimum framework for member states to kind of implement their own national legislation. So as Daniela can speak to, the particulars of each national law differ in some respect. But with that minimum framework in mind, I think upon receipt of a whistleblower complaint, well, first, it's a predicate to that. It goes without saying that organizations need to establish and document procedures for providing acknowledgement and feedback on whistleblower reports as a predicate to receiving them. They have to focus on maintaining the confidentiality and security of those reports and protecting the integrity of the investigation as well, in protecting the individuals who are involved in that particular investigation. With respect to acknowledging and clarifying reports, the whistleblowing director does require organizations to acknowledge receipt of a report to a whistleblower within 7 days of receiving that report. Then the whistleblower directive requires that organizations designate an impartial person to follow up on that report and communicate with the whistleblower. So, for example, a member of the organization's compliance or legal or human resources groups. And you can also designate, in some instances, an external service provider who's engaged to help the organization administer that whistleblowing program. So think of like a third-party organization, any number of which that we work with that provides hotline services or legal counsel for that matter. Organizations are also under a obligation to diligently investigate each reported concern and then provide written, verbal, or in-person feedback to the whistleblower within 3 months from either acknowledging the receipt of the whistleblower report or the expiration of the 7-day period after the report was made if the organization failed to acknowledge receipt of the report.
Right. So there are like these deadlines and timing requirements, all of which I think to me seem like pretty basic. In other words, you receive a report and within 7 days, you got to contact the whistleblower and say, hey, we got your report, we're looking at it, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's a sort of a requirement to diligently investigate the matter, which we would always recommend anyways, and to try to do it as promptly as possible. And then obviously keeping the reporter apprised of developments, not with any great detail, but at least what's going on. Those don't seem too controversial to me in the sense of these are sort of best practices. I'm still struck, I think, Alex, by the burden shifting that the EU whistleblower law engages in. And then I guess it gets to, and we're going to turn to Daniela in a second, to, you know, what are the individual countries doing with regard to directives? There's no requirement, am I right, Alex, just on this legal point, there's no requirement that they enact the directive, you know, lock, stock, and barrel. I think some countries have made, you know, their own tinkering sort of adjustments to some of the requirements. Is that fair to say?
That's definitely fair to say. Like I said earlier, Mike, it really sets a minimum, it sets a threshold or kind of a minimum, a floor by which the directive's requirements apply to EU member states. So with that in mind, they can go above and beyond the directive's minimum requirements and provide, in some instances, much more stringent protections for whistleblowers and tighten timeframes.
Right. In other words, so it's a minimum, and you can make it more strict if you want than whatever's in the EU directive, is what you're saying, right? Okay. Well, Daniela, last but not least, because you're, you know, a rock star in this area, let's talk about a few of the major countries. I know if anyone needs any more sort of specific guidance on country requirements, Alex and Daniela have put together sort of a database and are tracking sort of the country by country specific implementation steps that have been taken. But we're only going to highlight a few of the countries here. And of course, we have to start off with, of course, the French. I think they're, you know, obviously a very important player in the compliance field. And I thought we would start off with France in Europe to talk about. But Daniela, can you give us a little background on what France has done with regard to the whistleblower directive?
Yes, thank you, Mike. So France transposed the EU directive into law on March 21, 2022, and it later enacted another decree that outlines the protocol for gathering and handling whistleblower reports. So in France, who may investigate the report? Organizations must establish written internal reporting programs and procedures. By such, organizations must establish a person or a department designated to receive and process the reports. Furthermore, disciplinary sanctions must be imposed within 2 months of the employer becoming aware of the employee's wrongdoing.
To me, Daniela, that's pretty amazing. So if you start an investigation based upon a report, that means that if you're in France or subject to this, you have 2 months to complete your investigation and 2 months to impose the discipline. I know there's an exception for if there's a criminal proceeding that has started simultaneously. But to me, some of these investigations can take longer than 2 months. But what this means is you have to prioritize. In France, if it's a French-connected case of wrongdoing, you have to initiate an investigation and complete the investigation and implement any sanction against the employee within 2 months. That's pretty amazing, actually.
I agree with you, especially because in some cases, the whistleblower does not engage and does not provide more information to conduct the investigation.
Right. The other thing that's interesting I noticed in France is, and some of the countries are not allowing anonymous reporting. So you have to disclose your identity. And that to me is really, I mean, you know, we're used to in the United States, and I don't know what it's like in, you're from Colombia and Latin America. I don't know if anonymous reporting is allowed in those countries, but I know in the United States, anonymous reporting is definitely permitted as a way to, you know, encourage people to report. But France does not allow that. That was interesting to me.
Yes, I agree, especially when there are employees who are afraid of being retaliated against, they most likely will not disclose their identity.
Yeah. And what sort of attitude does France take towards retaliation, potential retaliation or claims of retaliation?
So an employee who has suffered retaliation may seek an order for reinstatement from the labor court, and the employee can seek remedial measures against retaliation.
Wow. Well, that is actually pretty interesting. So France bans anonymous reporting, but puts you under a two-month requirement to resolve your cases. So that means, let's say you're at a global company and something comes in relating to French misconduct, I think you have to sort of prioritize that to make sure you get to that within specific deadlines. So, Daniela, let's turn to Germany. Give us a sense of what is going on in Germany with regard to the whistleblower directive.
So the whistleblower directive was transposed in Germany on May 12, 2023. There are no restrictions in the German law in relation to whom in the company may investigate the report. In okay. Germany, it's allowed anonymous reports, and there's a deadline of 3 months to conduct investigations since the receipt of the report.
So anonymous reporting is permitted. Anybody may investigate the report within the company, unlike France. And here, instead of 2 months, well, you have to confirm the receipt of the report within 7 days, and then you have 3 months following confirmation. So look at the implications of that. You have to provide the notification within 7 days. And again, you have to, you know, within 3 months, that's like 90 days. That seems pretty reasonable because, you know, you should be able to complete your investigation and figure out what's going to happen in terms of discipline or anything like that within that time frame. But very interesting.
Also, the German law provides that the 3 months can be extended up to 6 months in complex cases.
Okay. So if it's a financial case, you know, let's say it's a reporting of financial misconduct, you know, complex that requires, let's say, a forensic accountant to help, there are ways to get that extended. That makes sense. Okay, let's turn to another interesting country, the Netherlands and Amsterdam and the Dutch Whistleblowing Protection Act. Daniela, give us the highlights of that as well.
Sure. So the EU Whistleblower Directive was transposed on January 25, 2022, and it requires that the company can decide who may conduct the investigation. It can be of counsel or someone inside the company.
Right.
And there's also a 3 months deadline to conduct the investigation. Furthermore, anonymous reports are permitted.
Okay. So again, we have a 3 month deadline. I think all of these, however, would allow outside counsel, right? If you wanted to hire an outside lawyer like Volkoff Law to do this, that's not going to be a problem under the law, I'm assuming. So the Netherlands, you could have an outside counsel, Germany, France, you know, because I would think outside counsel, sometimes depending upon conflicts of interest, you would want to have an independent outside counsel do it.
Yeah, I think in some jurisdictions, the law requires that the company has a team inside to receive the report.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. So we did the Netherlands. Let's do a couple more. And then any closing comments you guys had. Let's go to Spain, beautiful Spain. And we're saving the best for last, which is Italy. But Spain, tell us about Spain and what they're doing on the whistleblower reporting, Daniela.
So Spain transposed the EU Whistleblower Directive on February 2023. And in addition to the topics covered by the directive, reports that are also covered are occupational health and safety breaches, infringements that directly affect and undermine the general interest where no specific regulation applies, and the general interest shall be deemed to be affected when it involves an economic loss for the public treasury. Categories of persons who may file a report in Spain include shareholders, employees, contractors, subcontractors, suppliers, former employees, and trainees.
Okay. Does it have to be investigated by an in-house staff or by a third party such as outside counsel or some consultant or whatever?
According to Spanish law, reports may be investigated by in-house counsel or by a third party.
And any deadlines that we have to be aware of?
Yes, again, another 3 months to conduct the investigation since it was received.
Okay. And 7 days, like the directive, to acknowledge the receipt of the report. Okay. And anonymous reporting in Spain, is that permitted or no?
It is allowed.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go. Since I'm in Sicily right now and in the most beautiful part of Italy, tell us what Italy has done with regard to the EU directive.
So Italy transposed the EU directive on August 4, 2022. And in addition to the reporting topics covered under the directive, the Italian whistleblower protection law includes administrative, financial, civil, and criminal offenses that are not included under the directive. Of persons who may report, also there's no variation from the directive.
Okay.
And the investigation must be conducted by a person that's autonomous inside the organization, or it can be conducted by an independent external entity.
So a law firm could do it in that sense, or a consultant, right?
Yeah. In Italy, the deadline is even shorter than in the other countries. To conduct the investigation, companies have up to 30 days upon receipt of.
Wow. That's short. That is really short. So that means you, when you get a report that comes in from Italy, you better acknowledge it quickly and then get started on the investigation.
Yeah.
And anonymous reporting?
It's allowed.
Okay. So thanks for just, I mean, we went through, you know, several of the big countries or the major countries in the EU. Before we leave, I wanted to just sort of ask Alex and then Daniela just for any closing comments you have in terms of what would you recommend to your clients or our clients or companies out there as to how much attention to pay to these issues?
Yes, I would say that companies should really make the resources available to conduct the investigations quickly because the law is not giving them a lot of time to conduct them.
Yeah. And I think one just closing comment and any thoughts you guys have, there clearly is a movement within the United States and in Europe and other economies to encourage more whistleblowing reporting, to reward whistleblowers. In the United States, we didn't go through the U.S. programs and the new programs that are being proposed. But it seems like there just seems to be more public favoring of whistleblowing reporting and encouraging it as a way to unearth potential misconduct. I also would note that we have allegations surrounding two whistleblowers in the United States relating to the Bowen case who have mysteriously died. And I think there's more and more concern about protecting whistleblowers. And I think that the EU is certainly attuned to that. So is the United States. And I think more and more countries around the world are becoming that way. So I think this is just the beginning of a trend that I expect to continue, particularly also with reward payments being available for whistleblowers. So companies need to get in front of this and do that and pay attention to this issue. We also, just for everyone's background, on the 21st of this month, we're putting on a webinar on how to respond effectively to employee and whistleblower complaints. And that's more of a nuts and bolts type of discussion where we're going to review some of the whistleblower laws, the current proposals, and go through some scenarios and best practices for how to handle that. But now, Daniela and Alex, can you each give your contact information so that if people want to reach you and you guys are going to be tracking this information in the EU and people were happy to provide that information if you reach out to us. So go ahead. Daniela, you first.
Yeah, so you can contact me at dmelendez@bulkoflaw.com.
Okay, both of you, thank you so much. Really appreciate the great work that you do. You guys are real leaders in this area, and we appreciate everything that you do. And please, anyone who's interested, reach out to Daniela or Alex. They'll be happy to help you, and we're here for you always. So thank you again.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support the show is by subscribing on your favorite listening platform. To learn more and connect with Michael Volkov, go to volkovlaw.com.